Oh yeah, you guys use this too. Nice.
Yeah, we just started using it recently.
Yeah, it's been pretty reliable lately. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I guess we can just jump right into it. I mean, we've been talking about this, I feel like, two episodes now. Well, we just talked about it a little bit Sunday, but...
I'm like talking about it whenever we record now. I'm talking about it with all my friends in real life.
Are any of you guys in Canada?
No.
Oh, no. Okay. All right. Oh, that's cool that everyone in America is talking about it.
Well, yeah, dude.
I haven't heard a lot of people, so I've been trying to be that voice in my area as much as I can.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
It's definitely quiet on the news. I feel like people, you know, I feel like they're trying to avoid talking about it. And yeah. Then, you know, anytime it's brought up in like our media here, it's very like, you know, very like, what's the word?
White supremacists.
Yeah, just kind of like resentful or just kind of like, just there's just a sort of bitterness about it. But it's kind of amazing. It's amazing to watch.
I just read a Slate article that I think said that there was only like 1,000 truckers that showed up or something. Some really low number, which is really funny to me.
All paid for by Russia as well. That's what our state broadcaster says.
Exactly.
I was talking to Alina Lang yesterday because I wanted to get her views on this whole thing. And she's based in Switzerland. And she says that it's not being covered at all in European news. So I think it's interesting. Such a reaction for just a few trucks.
Yeah. Those drone cams of, masses of people. Those are all bots down there. Those are all deep fakes.
That's the FSB fake doing deep fakes.
Yeah.
People have been trying. They're be like, oh, well, I mean, I guess that protest is pretty big, but like, look at this Crown of the Leafs game.
Oh my God.
You're like, yeah, if you got that Leafs crowd to be like focused about a couple sets of demands, they would be pretty strong and they'd be pretty effective.
Yeah. And also it's like negative 30 outside and people are coming from all over. I don't know. It's just not a comparable situation for obviously on a lot of fronts, but they're like, well, that's not that impressive.
Yeah. And they try to downplay it while also like putting out articles that are like declaring states of emergency and saying like, we're losing control of the city. They're blockading us in, but it's not that big of a protest. It's a very fringe minority.
Yeah. The reaction from the Ottawa residents and the city of Ottawa has just been like hysterical.
This is at Trustworthy Slav.
This is at Incognito, COH.
CRK, black.com, pilled.
This is the Fed Post.
I was sitting in on a call a few days ago hosted by a city councilor and this Ottawa influencer. And there was like 2,000 people on there, not all of whom were living in Ottawa, but I think most of whom were speaking were living in Ottawa. And they were talking about how they were just so afraid. They couldn't leave their house. They were having panic attacks when people who were living in my neighborhood were claiming that whenever they saw a truck drive on the street, any truck, they would get like a panic attack and they couldn't leave the house. I'm like, dude, like if you don't live like literally in within five, like, you know, streets of Parliament, you never know any of this is happening. It's completely normal once you leave like the epicenter, I guess. Like it's so, people are claiming this is like a siege. Like a siege is something which is on the outside. Like that doesn't make any sense. Like like an occupation. Yeah. Oh, anyways, someone actually called, they were like, we need to take arms against these truckers.
Holy shit, militias.
That's like, I remember I saw some post, I think that PSYOP Resistor posted yesterday. Yeah. It was just this random lib being like, we should carpet bomb all of the trucks.
You know, pushing Iraq and Kuwait shit.
It's like a picture from the Gulf War of just thousands of lives lost. Like,
he posted a picture of like the Road of Death out of Kuwait, courtesy of George H.W. Bush, and said, do that, Canadian Air Force, come on. But I'm just surprised he didn't end the tweet with ACAB, but...
ACAB, but wouldn't it be great if our streets looked like this here in Canada?
ACAB, but you know, death squads.
It's an interesting point that Layla brought up, though, because I've been curious about that, just as far as like how big the actual thing is, like geographically, like how much of the city it has been taken up by these truckers. Because I, you know, I do recall, you know, I live in Washington, and I remember I went and saw the beauty and splendor of Chaz and Chop when that summer of love was going on. And I was pretty surprised by the fact that, like, you know, I mean, yeah, you get outside of like a couple of districts and it's like nothing ever even happened, really. And so, I don't know. That's interesting to hear. It is funny hearing all these reports, like you said, about it being, it's a siege. Oh my God, it's a siege. You would think that they're, it's an occupying army that has the city surrounded.
Yeah, just outside the moat.
Right.
No, it's just it's ridiculous, because these kinds of statements are being used, like this kind of verbiage is not just being used by random people. They're being used by the chief of police here and the mayor, you know, like it's and other politicians and journalists in Canada. Like, it's just, it's so hyperbolic and hysterical. I mean, I guess in terms of the size, it is like when you're in Ottawa it's a small city. But when you're in and around Parliament, it is quite substantial. Like, the entire street in front of Parliament is completely filled with trucks and cars. And some of the side roads are also filled up with trucks and cars. And that definitely the numbers get swelled up on the weekends when people are off work and they come and they join the protests and they stay for a few days. And then it you know, decreases, and those who are able to, you know, spend that time there are able to stay. I mean, I live within four kilometers actually of Parliament. Ottawa is planned in such a way that it would take me 1 hour to walk there, but it's like a 8 minute drive, and like 30 minutes on transit. So if you're in my area and you didn't watch the news and you never went to Parliament or downtown, you would never know what's happening. But when you're in downtown, the effect has been quite substantial. Like, it has a big effect for the size of the city. Like, it is pretty substantial. You know, they were ordered by a judge before yesterday or yesterday to stop honking.
That's sure work. Yeah.
No, it actually has worked, like, for a variety of reasons, but they have stopped honking. Pardon me. Yeah. But before that, it was very noisy. The honking was like, the people were most bothered by the honking. And the honking was pretty substantial. So now that that's stopped, like, it is a bit more of a toned down atmosphere, but it really swelled. Like, you know, I think the first weekend of protest, there must've been 100,000 people there, which is very large for Canadian protest, given our size of country, et cetera. And then every weekend people come back, like they come back when they're off work to support the convoy. And I mean, just in terms of, like, you know, the impact it's had in Canadian politics, it's triggered a bunch of other convoys and similar protests in other cities. I think all major cities have had some kind of convoy and supporting protest. And now a few border crossings are getting occupied as well, which is, of course, very important, yeah, for the Canadian economy, because we actually import a load of stuff from the United States.
There's some bridge that's being, the Ambassador Bridge or something like that, that's being blocked off right now.
It is, yeah. It's really pissing off the premier here. And the border crossing between one of the border crossings in Alberta, the province of Alberta, is being blocked as well. Or it's like not completely blocked. The traffic is greatly slowed, but I mean, it is as good as a block. So yeah, I mean, I think it is, it's an interesting, like, as you say, dichotomy between, like, people trying to minimize it, but also the kind of hysterics that's coming out of the political and media class that's only been amplifying. It hasn't died down, to my surprise. Like, they're not moderating their tone by any means.
How long has it been going on for in Ottawa? Because I remember seeing posts and stuff of, like, the convoy driving there and heading there. But how long has it actually been planted in Ottawa?
It started on the 28th of January, and it's been there since. So we're now going into 2 weeks, or close to 2 weeks. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Nice. Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah,
it had me thinking a lot actually about Chop and Chaz, but I wasn't like that plugged into that whole thing as much. I didn't really, but it made me think, I was like, maybe I was I being unfair to Chop and Chaz? Like, now that I'm seeing their reaction to the truckers, was I being
There's been no murders at the trucker rally that I am aware of yet. And there's been no gangs of vigilant, like little, like kind of warlords popping up. So I think that's kind of a pretty big place where it diverges as far as comparing them.
No SoundCloud rappers taking over.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah,
that's God, true.
What was that guy's name?
Who knows?
I can't even. It's a distant memory now. Yeah, I don't know. I went a couple of times and like just took some. I'm into videography and stuff, and I took some videos. And I mean, it was a fucking mess, man. I mean, I think I remember the big thing for me, because I was a little on the fence about it in the beginning, and I think the big thing for me was like showing up. Seeing some stuff, and then like coming back that night and seeing the night after I had been there later that day was when like that teenager got shot in the head execution style, and it was a whole fucking thing, and there was kind of a general, it was a whole mess. Hopefully nothing like that happens with this. I'm not really getting the sense that that's really something that's likely to happen,
but yeah, I think the Chaz like occupation was a lot darker internally as far as like what was going on.
One of the big things is just that I see right out of the gate. Because you could walk around Chaz and you could see like little info stuff posted up places, right? And that's like the first thing I go to look at, right? Like, what are the demands? What's the whole point of this, right? Yeah. I want to check it out, right? Because I'm sympathetic by default. Mm-hmm. And it was all stuff on racial lines that was stuff that just wasn't even really like
intangible. Like, you couldn't really have a benchmark for success for the demands.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. I like to kind of emphasize just like it just wasn't, none of it's really particularly quantifiable.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And a lot of it is really, it's funny. I'm going into Chaz way more than I expected to. But a lot of it was a lot more like kind of liberal symbolism kind of stuff. The thing that I'm so encouraged with this is that, like, I mean, everything about this is tangible. You know what I mean? Like, there's bargaining power here.
Yep.
I mean, I don't know. The most striking thing that I saw at Chaz was like a guy in a suit of like armor walking around. That was pretty cool.
like chainmail?
Like literally plate mail.
Nice, bro.
It was pretty sick. He took a picture with me. I liked that. There were like several burned out cars.
Nice. Kind of felt like walking around some sort of post-apocalyptic video game or something.
Yeah. I also got my personal pictures of the little indigenous person's garden there before that blew up online.
You hang them on your fridge.
Oh man. it was a hoot, but yeah, I'm very, this feels like what I wanted.
Yes.
That whole summer to be, you know,
It feels like there's, as far as I'm aware, it seems like there's just like a couple of pretty clear and material demands from the truckers, like no more mandates. And you take away these laws that are not letting us cross provincial lines and such, which seems a lot more easy to meet and wrap my head around than like broad, just like ideological directives. Mm. But that may not be exactly the case. What do you guys know more specifically what their demands are as a whole?
Yeah, they do have I wouldn't say that this is so like organized in a very disciplined way. The kind of the main organizers that you always hear about, those that are, for instance, running the GoFundMe was shut down, but now they have some other platform they're using. They're not actually like, you know, in control, quote unquote, of the situation. They can't like send orders to the truckers, but the truckers are all kind of together. And whenever I talk to any of them, they want something very specific. They want an end to the vaccine mandates, you know, whether that be just for their industry, whether that be for the entire country. And I think to offer a fair criticism, I do think that, so for instance, like the main kind of document where the demands are outlined is something that the main organizers created. It's called a Memorandum of Understanding. And it essentially asks for an ending of all vaccine mandates and most restrictions throughout the country. And a lot of people have criticized them by saying that a lot of this is outside of federal jurisdiction. And they're also kind of, you know, they have this, they're trying to do this weird thing where they want to pressure the Senate and the governor to like pressure the provinces to move on this. And I mean, I think it's true in that sense. Like that's a little bit, that's jurisdictionally, it would be not realistic, but I think, you know, I think the main thrust of the whole thing, like, you know, I think being, you know, if the federal government can't do anything against the provinces to move them on that front. And I don't think that's entirely true either, but yeah, I think that definitely the federal government dropping the vaccine passports that they've instituted and the vaccine mandates that they've instituted, it's very realistic. They can do that in 2 seconds. It was just passed as an order in council. I think all of those orders were. They were not passed as parliamentary laws, so they're very easy to rescind. So I think in that sense, yeah, those are very, they're very specific. It is a relatively specific demand. Like, it's only to do with the mandates and only to do with the vaccine passports. And, you know, I think that they're probably advancing a set of demands that are, you know, probably more than what they expect to get. I think a lot of truckers would be satisfied if the federal government at least fulfilled their, you know, part of the bargain, so to speak. Like if they were able to drop the mandates on their side, what they're able to do with their jurisdiction, then they would probably go home, right? Or go pressure their provincial heads. Or they could be convinced that that would be enough to kind of set the ball rolling for the rest of the country, et cetera. So I don't think they're unreasonable in the sense that they're effusive or they're non-precise. Like, I think they are precise enough. I do think there is a bit of confusion in terms of like the political kind of how realistically this is politically in terms of the federal government being able to pressure all of the provinces, but maybe not. Like maybe they think, you know, maybe they thought it through otherwise and they think it is like, it would be part of a political analysis, which I've not been privy to, but in terms of like, you know, it's not like ending, like, you know, something Occupy was kind of berated for was that they were like end inequality, basically. It was like a general demand that effusive, like it, you know, had to do with, you know, all facets of society, like the entire world. So no one could ever fulfill such a demand, right? But this is something that could be fulfilled actually by like precise people that I can point to, you know, whether it's at the provincial or federal level.
Yeah, that's the thing I think a lot about in terms of comparing to American populism is the demands, like them being tangible, achievable to some degree. I mean, I think that's, I mean, you know, like Slav was saying, I think at the beginning of the 2020 riots, I think we all sort of had this like vague hope, at least, that something might, you know, spin out of it that was actually more real or useful to everyone. But, you know, that quickly just became like a DNC fundraiser and, you know, Jan 6 and Occupy, Tea Party, all sort of the, you know, I think I'm more kind on those things than other people in our sphere, because I take it as like a breaking of complacency, which any of that in America is, I view some net good in that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'll probably defend it more than other people, even though we all know it's, you know, they've all been redirected and kind of fizzled into nothing. And
it's kind of good of us like as a temperature check, though, of the general populace.
Yeah, that's what I've always thought of it as. And like, you know, whether the truckers get what they want or not, as a temperature check or just as a gauge of like, this is not fringe, that I think that alone is an important thing. And just the determination they've been going. I mean, they've been going for this long. I mean, I didn't expect them to go this long, honestly. I didn't want to say it out loud, but I didn't think they would keep going this long and be this serious about it. So, you know, but I think, yeah, that demand thing is really the key thing. And I mean, you know, even with Jan 6, what's their demand to get Trump back in or whatever? Like, you really think about it, it's like the demand is really like, yeah, if you don't have a clear thing, it's hard to really, doesn't really matter what you do. You know what I mean? But
yeah, and it's hard to kind of get support thrown behind it, too, if you don't have a clear goal of what you're trying to do, because it's just like, all right, well, what even is this for?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is an interesting thing, right? Because you're talking about like the feasibility of some aspects of the demands and everything. But like one thing that I'm a little bit curious about is like, you know, looking at it from the other side, like what in the fuck is the move for the Canadian government? You know, like it doesn't, it like it, at this point, how do you get these fucking trucks out of there? And these trucks and these construction vehicles and these tractors and just so much fucking shit, dude. It's insane. I mean, I guess like I don't know any tow companies that are going to want to touch this at all. I'm just saying
I have COVID now, right? It's like, that's what they said.
Well, if it works for Justin Trudeau, it can work for tow truck companies.
right, exactly. Everyone in the Western world's going to have COVID before long. I mean, the only thing I can think about is the army, and that's going to be like this humongous shitstorm that, like, you have to imagine, like, Trudeau wants to get out of this with an intact career, which seems like a harder needle to thread than ever. I mean, like, what the fuck is the play there? Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
So in terms of physically getting the trucks out of Ottawa, yes, it's been actually reported in mainstream press that, you know, sources that journalists have spoken to have confirmed that tow companies in Ottawa are refusing to answer the government's call to tow the trucks.
Nice.
Out of whatever reason, solidarity, whatever it might be, they've refused so far.
Well, and you also have to wonder too. I mean, like, that's got to be really bad press for your company to do that with a lot of people.
Well, and not to mention, it's just like a Sisyphean task. Like, that would just be such a bitch trying to tow those fucking 18 wheelers.
Yes. There's another issue too, because yes, it's not just cars and you know, pickup trucks that you would be able to tow them with a regular, you know, tow truck. The big trucks, once you lock their wheels, you have to get a bigger truck than them to remove them, right? So it would be a Sisyphean task to remove it, like physically force them to be removed using another, like a tow truck type thing. But what they could do is, and this is what seems to be the momentum towards, is they could call the Canadian Armed Forces, the army here. There's existing legislative tools for them to do so. They don't need to invoke the Emergencies Act or anything like that. They can do it not without too much difficulty. But I don't even think that would be necessary. What is rumored that will happen in the next few days potentially is that they're going to call the Royal Mounted Police that we have here, which is the Federal Police Force, RCMP.
The Mounties,
yeah. And the Mounties are going to surround the truckers and arrest them and get other people to drive the trucks out of where they're currently. So just drive them away, basically. So that's the current thinking. That's what people think is going to happen. And so a bunch of the organizers put out a press release today asking people to come to, like, to, you know, potentially, you know, get prepared to come to Ottawa to support the protest movement and to stop this from happening. But yeah, no one wants to, no prime minister wants to, you know, be seen to unleash the army against its own civilians. The last two times it happened, it was once with regards to an indigenous dispute over land in 1990 called the Oka crisis. And it turned out really poorly for the federal government at the time. And then the other time, and the provincial one too. But in that situation, there was like an armed conflict. So like the indigenous protesters were armed, and the other time that happened in 1970 was the FLQ, which was a Quebecois nationalist organization, had kidnapped two politicians. They had murdered one and they were holding another one hostage. And then at that point, they invoked the War Measures Act, which is the act that used to exist before it was replaced by the Emergencies Act. And then they sent in the army to occupy Quebec City at the time. And I think that did also cause a lot of controversy. Like at the time, we had an NDP party that was a little bit more, I don't know, maybe had a bit more proletarian substance to it, I suppose. And the leader of that, it was, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was Tommy Douglas, the guy who started public health care in Canada. He started in his province first and it spread from there. He condemned that move. And it was actually, interestingly, it was the first time this was done was actually Pierre Elliott Trudeau, so Justin Trudeau's father, who unleashed the army on his own citizens.
It's a fun little Easter egg.
Yeah, I think there's about a lot of interesting historical parallels because, you know, Pierre Elliott Trudeau is also, of course, the man who, well, under his government, they formulated and instituted the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which is the thing that the, you know, truckers are kind of pointing to as proof that, you know, their demands are valid and within their rights as citizens. So, yeah, there's a lot of interesting you know, first as tragedy, then as farce type things going on, I'd say.
Well, and also you got to consider that even in Britain, which has never been shy of like unleashing the state forces on workers, even here, like in the intense strikes of the 80s, they did use the army, but they disguised them as cops. Because to openly deploy them on the mainland here would have been such a major escalation, even for like a psychopath like Margaret Thatcher. So for someone like Justin Trudeau, it's going to be, to openly deploy them is going to be very difficult without a gamble on something that, to try and enforce something that they can negotiate this away fairly easily in policy terms. But the only thing that's stopping it really is the fact that Trudeau and the others seem to have painted themselves into a corner where their political pride can't take the hit of being seen to give in to people that they've demonized as basically like a column of Canadian KKK men. So yeah. It's interesting to see how he extracts himself from this without causing an escalation of a situation which he's made worse at every turn.
Yeah, I could see them sending in a military force or something under the guise of just normal police. We have a good bit of experience with that here in the United States. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, it would be very difficult because the truckers truly are, like, despite what the news will say, by any objective measure, they are peaceful. There's no more crime in Ottawa currently than there was outside of the protest. Like, you know, actually, there's a small journalistic outfit here in Ottawa called Blacklocks, and they gathered police reports covering the week of the protest and compared it against the week before the protest. And they actually saw that there was fewer crimes reported in the area that the protest covered than the week before. Like, so there's, the crime has gone down by any indication, but, you know, even if it hadn't, like, you know, there's no, they're not carrying weapons. Like, they're not, there's been no injuries, no arrests over anything like very serious. Like, there was an arrest over like desecrating a national memorial. And maybe, I think there was like a small kind of scuffle that happened, but again, it's nothing out of the normal. Like, it's not like Canada is a crime-free society. Like, you will have some percentage of crime in any given group of people, just that sure. reflects the general crime rate within the country. So that's nothing abnormal. Like, it doesn't mean that the protest movement and the truckers are violent per se. And, you know, speaking from personal experience, like whenever I go down there, I see kids at any time of the day, actually, like even at night, I see kids, I see people like, you know, just chilling, like, you know, giving out free food, like everyone's really friendly and happy to talk. And like, you know, I think it would look really bad on them to unleash an aggressive force against these guys. And I think that's why their, you know, their bark so far has been much more severe than the bite, because they know that it's going to be a huge PR disaster for them. But at the same time, as Alex was saying, Justin Trudeau has kind of painted himself into a corner. I don't think that the Liberals expected this protest to be what it was. Like, the same organizers actually that led the convoy this time around organized a similar convoy a few years ago with trucks as well. And they just drove into Parliament. They didn't garner any mass support. They stayed for like a day or two. They gave a few speeches and they left. It was a political non-issue. It was of no consequence. But now, like, the truckers have garnered not just national support, but international support. Right. And they are being supported in material ways by people in and outside of Ottawa, bringing them food, bringing them gas, even under threats of arrest. Right. And so, you know, Trudeau didn't see that coming. Like, he didn't believe that was, I guess he like read the news that was minimizing the whole thing and, you know, got high on his own supply. And so now he can't really retreat.
He's got that COVID confusion.
He's got long COVID.
Justin Trudeau is suffering from long COVID right now.
He looks like Jacinda Ardern at the same time.
Dude, I wonder how much of a lot of this is just like, yeah, like you said, like leaders getting high on their own supply, like just totally in this kind of sealed chamber. Of people. I mean, like, I have to imagine that, like, a lot of these like elites are authentically concerned about COVID. I mean, I don't know, maybe we disagree on that, but like just surrounding yourself with the constant just hyperventilating about this stuff. I wonder how much of that is to blame for like this policy from people.
I think a moron like Trudeau, like some puppet like him, like, yeah, I think he probably believes it. I think he's like an airhead. I mean, I don't think he's really thinking about anything.
I don't think so. Because like when he went to the G7 meeting in the UK in Cornwall, he wasn't like following the protocols. He wasn't like, you know, him and Freeland would be wearing like a mask for just photo ops. But otherwise they would be mask free, like having fun with their G7 friends.
Partying with Boris, as all good leaders should.
Yeah. Like, you know, they traveled against, I think it was a standing travel advisory ban. And when he came back, he didn't even quarantine for the full 14 days, as was the policy at the time. So I don't know. I don't think that Trudeau, you know, even if they care, quote unquote, about COVID-19, I think what they don't care about is the restrictions that they've imposed on everyone, because it doesn't affect them in the slightest. Yeah. Like, for instance, mm-hmm. we need to have a vaccine passport to use a plane or a train in Canada. And you can apply for medical and religious exemptions, but it's a headache. And from what I hear, some of them actually have been rejected, amazingly, with something I did not expect. But, you know, if you have the vaccine passport, interestingly, doesn't apply for if you have a private charter plane, right? So, which nice. Justin Trudeau fucking has, right? So, and right, all these right. guys have, they're all really rich. So, if, you know, you can fly around, you have a home gym, you know, your elderly parents, you can afford to like have a 24-hour nurse like attending to right. them. None of these things affect them. They don't have to live with the policies that they deploy on others. So, yeah.
Part of it is that they as all like bourgeois leaders, they do see the working class as basically a filthy and diseased mass. There is a bit of that going on. Certainly that's been true of like the British policymakers. And I think it's true in most of the advanced capitalist nations.
Yeah.
And also like they just like the telling comment from, I think it was Nancy Pelosi, who said when caught at an unmasked fundraiser, said it was a responsible and vaccinated crowd.
Yeah. Highly very sophisticated and educated.
Highly sophisticated and vaccinated.
Yeah. I love it. And I mean, that is one thing that I like about this situation is that it always, that sentiment very easily rises to the surface with like calling people plague rats or I'm going to cringe as I say it out loud with my own mouth, but like calling them like the flu trucks clan and just insane shit like that. Which again, it's like boomer libs have like the absolute least fun boomer energy possible. Blue Trucks Clan, are you fucking kidding?
They love
me?
That shit. It's like little ad libs for them.
Yeah, they're so incredibly excited to have an excuse to call their opponents filthy and unclean now.
Oh, they all think it subconsciously, but that's why a part of the reason why like these bourgeois types in Britain certainly like loved COVID was because it gave license for them to like exercise all of their class prejudices at once.
Yeah.
And feel completely fine about it because it was all about public health. Right. And they could feel like, oh, well, we just care about people. So we want to lock you away somewhere and not allow you out unless it's to, I don't know, deliver my Amazon packages.
Yeah. In America, we kind of got a lot of that pre-COVID. They kind of, I feel like, unveiled it just to see if it could get on its legs with the Trump movement and calling them deplorables. And, you know, kind of casting that light on anyone who supported anything that was counter to the agenda of the liberal elite here in America.
Yeah.
At this point, like just calling someone like a white supremacist has basically just become like a classist insult because it's like pretty much never actually an honest observation.
What goes along with it is the assumption that you live in a trailer and you have these like burnt out cars out front that you've been working on for 40 years or this and that and the other.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think, but to be honest, like, I don't think this is about COVID. I know people have been saying this, but I think it's true. Like, I just think that the government in Canada is even more insulated and closed off from popular contestation and involvement from the working class than the US is, I would say. I think the US is also, wouldn't say it's like, you know, no one would say it's like a true democracy or whatever, but like, I think there are more sites for contestation and there's more opportunities for the working classes in some, you know, mostly disorganized form to get involved, have their views expressed. And also I think that there's more robust laws with regards to just like basic liberal rights. Like there's an absolute right for free speech. We don't have that here. There's hate speech laws, for instance. So I just think that they are used to just doing whatever they want and politicking whichever way that suits whatever agenda they have. I think in this case, I think the COVID policies are well explained through, the fact that they're kind of thought of and applied by a bunch of bureaucrats that have a bunch of devolved powers from the executive branch. And then it kind of enters this ecosystem of media and other bureaucratized structures in our society and like a lot of professionals and stuff. And it kind of, takes on a life of its own almost. And people, gain a bunch of material incentives to keep this thing going. Grants are created for universities to study COVID-19 and whatever else, right? So, this kind of creates these various things like build up. Like, for instance, doctors are given a bonus for doing like vaccinations. Like, I'm not saying that you can, directly tie one thing to the other, but all of these things kind of build up. And there's a material incentive for a lot of folks to not necessarily want to see the end of these approaches, right?
And, of course.
And it becomes a political tool for the bourgeoisie here, or the bourgeois politicians here, so like the Liberal Party, to, do politics over and to keep their base of, mainly petty bourgeois professionals busy and occupied and, feeling like they have giving them little fiefdoms of power, essentially, to better control them, because the position of the petty bourgeoisie is always quite wavering. Like, yeah. And so it's always been a challenge for the bourgeoisie to keep them, on their side, and also mm-hmm. keep them managing what their role is to manage the proletariat. And so that's how I kind of see this broadly speaking. I do think, though, like, my opinion from the start of this has been that the capitalists don't have a material interest in seeing all this stupid stuff go on, like these restrictions. And I do think that eventually over time, these restrictions would have wound down on their own. But the truckers, rose up and I think caused a genuine, portion of the working classes, at least in Canada, to rise up in support of them. In a disorganized fashion, yes, but I think the support is real. I do think there is an important proletarian element here mm-hmm. that I think it's been disappointing to see the Canadian communist and leftist generally just dismiss. But
absolutely.
But like, I do think that it's real. And I think that if they can accelerate the ending of this stuff, I think that's good, because I do think these restrictions cause a lot of not just emotional harm, but also real physical harm to people, mm-hmm. For instance, like right now, like in Ontario, if you're unvaccinated, you can't go see your elderly relatives, including children. So if your kid is unvaccinated, which is not so uncommon, they can't go see their grandma in LTC in the last, 18 months average of their lives. So wow. It's quite inhumane. It's a travesty. It's a crime against humanity. It really is. And so many other things like that. It's not the only thing. So, I think it's good in that sense. But yeah, I just think I do think this has kind of gained this like political valence that it's still hard for me to compute, because nothing is like detached from the economic and material field. But I really think that Justin Trudeau, he and the political class generally in Canada, it's not just the Liberal Party, right? Most conservatives have also come up against the convoy to various uh-huh. degrees, right? So uh-huh. it's a pretty much unanimous opposition to these guys, to this movement.
Conservatives in Canada?
Yes.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, most of them have. Like, I just today, or maybe even yesterday, a very prominent conservative in Canada called Michael Chong came out against, completely against the convoy. He was part of Harper's cabinet, actually. Harper, who was like, I don't know, maybe you guys have heard of him in America. He's like supposed to be like the big bad right wing conservative that was in power for like three terms. Mm-hmm. Anyways, like, so I don't know. I think they're all offended with the gall of, regular working people and, some petty bourgeois people who are right now not of use to them,
yeah.
Daring to want to have some input into mm-hmm. this so-called democracy, daring to want to, ask for evidence about whether or not these restrictions are actually necessary, asking them to consider, okay, well, maybe after, since 90% of us are vaccinated, maybe you can drop this mandate. Have you considered doing that? Like doing something that's not, you know, strictly again on their own terms, on their own schedule. And they just, it's just so offensive to them. Like they just can't take it. It's intolerable.
Yeah, we were talking about this recently about the GOP here and how they just like really like honestly at best have just been horrendous enablers of all of this. And like, and the idea that they're like a dissenting party to any of this stuff is really for the most part pretty like symbolic. I mean, there are like a few people that are pushing back against some of this stuff. I'm sure that like living in Florida is more comfortable than, you know, living in my neck of the woods with all of this stuff. But like generally there hasn't actually been any meaningful pushback or resistance formally at all.
Formally. I feel like there's conservative like media people who are like speaking for it, and there's like I'll see like Rand Paul or Ted Cruz maybe like in a clip say something, but like a formal thing with the GOP, not really. I really think of them as like like what you said, and kind of way the Democrats were like the anti-war party after Iraq, where they were just playing themselves as like, oh, you know, we have voted against the surge and, you know, we want to scale this down or whatever, as if we didn't watch them all fucking go along with it at the beginning. You know, I feel like it's very it's like a parallel of that where they get to take that stance when really they're just sort of like the release valve. You know, they're just sort of like going back and forth with a lot of this.
And honestly, this just brings me back to like why like. one of my main reasons for just like really taking such exception for hating progressives in progressive factions in U.S. politics is that it's like a matter of like the enemy, the AOCs of the world kind of posture as being allies and everything. And that makes them uniquely more of an enemy in my eyes.
Absolutely.
And I see it as the exact same thing with conservatives. I mean, just completely fucking. And to be honest, like a lot of like the normie boomer cons that I know in real life will just like give, you know, hollow lip service to this stuff. But at the end of the day, I know that like you're going to fall in line and support shit that is gonna, you know, fuck my life up, you know? And at the very least, like shit libs are honest about it. Now, if that's actually worth very much, I don't know, but it's worth pointing out for sure.
Well, it's all such a narrow field, bourgeois politics now. Like these people all, I mean, just in terms of electoral base, like the Labour and Conservative Party here tries to appeal to a swing voting base of like petty bourgeois suburbanites in a few seats to win a parliamentary election. From what I know about America, it's basically even presidential elections come down to like swing neighborhoods in a few states of the same few swing voters. And that's who Biden won last time, if you believe he won. It's who the Republican leadership, like Kevin McCarthy and Mitch McConnell, will be aiming to win back next time, who might be a little bit on the fence about like some of the mandates, but they certainly don't see it as a big issue because it isn't for them. And like it comes down to like the fact that the areas for actual democratic contestation of anything, as Layla was saying, are incredibly small. I mean, here we got most of our restrictions overturned because like the British ruling class weren't truly invested in them from the start. What we had was like a political storm caused partly by Boris Johnson's sheer laziness and ineptitude, but also a real fear here wasn't really COVID. It was that they would be exposed on the lack of health service capacity, which they'd cut relentlessly for over a decade. And they were scared of a political disaster from that. And then these idiot scientists like Neil Ferguson, who's been wrong about every public health situation for 20 years, presented his case and said, look, I've looked at this article from China. If you do this, you'll stop infections and health service won't be overwhelmed. And that's literally how we got a lockdown. An opportunist scientist who had no proof of anything told an idiot prime minister who was scared for his political future, if you do this, you'll be all right. And then eventually what happened was, because there was a protest movement of the small business class that had generally votes conservative, it put enough pressure on like conservative backbenchers at a point where Boris Johnson was vulnerable over his being exposed as, you know, apparently having nonstop boozy parties at 10 Downing Street. And so our COVID regime was killed because of an intersection of like a certain amount of pressure from a protest movement put on conservative MPs at a time when Boris needed his backbenchers. And that's what killed it. Whereas in Canada, and Layla can speak further to this, like, first of all, I don't think Justin Trudeau drinks, smokes, or does anything human. At least we've got that. whereas like Boris does all of those things in abundance. But so far, like, in most places, the ruling parties haven't fractured in a way that ours has, which I guess makes us a little bit more interesting. But the sort of anodyne android figures like Justin Trudeau and Jacinda Ardern, so far they remain absolutely dedicated to this because, as you guys were saying, like these people live in a completely hermetically sealed bubble. There's no outside input whatsoever. And for a lot of them, I think they stopped believing the working class actually existed. I mean, I, for my sins, went through like a political science course 15 years ago. University and like, yeah, everybody laugh. It was good.
We all tone too. Yeah.
Yeah. And one of the things that struck me there I was meeting people there who were like from like a couple of classes above me in society. And like the way that they talk, they believed this sort of end of history idea that there was no working class in Britain anymore. You know, everybody was middle class. Now these proletarians don't exist. So when they see a bunch of workers, it doesn't compute anymore. They can't process it. It's everything they've been brought up to not believe. And then they just get angry and think, well, it must be, what is it? It's Nazis. I read that on a paper from a think tank. It must be Nazis. There's nothing else but that.
Well, that's one of the arguments they're making with the truckers now. They're saying, oh, well, a lot of these guys are they're owners. Mm-hmm. They're contractors and owners, so they're like, you know, they're not really just. But then, you know, people make the point of like, oh, Uber functions like that. Like, there's a lot of like contracting jobs in general that are just like kind of a gray area of how much of your own labor you own. But they're sort of painting it as, well, you know, because you have some like autonomy over your own truck or whatever, like you're basically like an oil baron or something.
Like they can do this very sterile class analysis if they want to and paint them as a petty bourgeois truck drivers. And they wouldn't even be entirely wrong in that. Like that may be correct under a class analysis, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't support them. Because from a Marxist frame, which is the people that are doing this mostly to try to distract from this, or purported Marxist and Western leftist all over. From a Marxist frame, really what you would want to do is you want to support any type of element of any strata of class that is weakening or at any point in time goes parallel with your with your interest to weaken the bourgeois state, to weaken the bourgeois class. And so you should throw support behind any type of element which is going to do that, even if it's just for temporary moments and tangential interest alignments. Like, for instance, you're talking, Leela, about how we're getting a lot of pushback from kind of like more urbanite petty bourgeois on this. And I think that that divide between like the media class, email American petty bourgeois versus the small producer, small business owner petty bourgeois is something that is very, very tangible right now. And I think that's kind of a lot of what sparked the MAGA stuff in America, as far as what gave a lot of support there, is that the smaller producer, small business owner type petty bourgeois is a little bit more on the chop block right now than the professional elite bourgeois is, petty bourgeois person is. So right now there's a rift within that class. And if you can support the one that is going to be more tangentially in line with the goals of the proletariat, or at least furthering their goals, which includes weakening the bourgeois, then why would you not throw your support behind that? It would be the correct thing to do that.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, okay. So I kind of depart from this analysis in a few ways. Like I don't think actually that we Marxist or whatever should support any movement that seems to, you know, do something regardless of the class composition. I do think you need to do an analysis and you need to, you know, to the best of your ability, understand, okay, how much of a proletarian element exists in this? Do the demands cohere to a proletarian interest? And, you know, make a decision, I think, off of those two main things. The fact, whether or not the truckers who are parked in front of Parliament right now are petty bourgeois or not, you know, I think is besides the point, because it's not about, you know, the individual class position of the people. It's about the movement as a whole. And so, like, let's look at it. Yep. I would agree. I think it's true. This is a petty bourgeois led movement. The leadership is petty bourgeois. That doesn't mean that it's bad just in like right away. Right. That just means that, you know, right away that if it remains, if the leadership remains that way, the political horizon for this movement is limited. It's it's not going to be a revolutionary movement. It's not going to, you know, substantially like yield a substantial material gain for the working class. Like, that's not the horizon available for this movement. Okay. But it doesn't mean, okay, like, so let's look at the demands. Like, are they relevant to the betterment of the working classes? Like, you know, is freedom of association important for the working class? Is bodily autonomy as against the state and the employer important for the working class? Is like freedom of movement, equality under the law? Are these things important? I would say yes, absolutely. I think obviously like these are important things for the working class. I would, you know, this is another piece of the puzzle. And then finally, you know, it's not just me thinking this. I do think there is genuine proletarian support. And there are some workers, you know, I think that the category of owner operator within the trucking industry is quite complex and ambiguous at times. I wouldn't exclude all of them as workers for that reason. But there are some genuine proletarians that are parked outside in front of parliament. They lost their jobs because of the mandate. And they're just, you know, they got all of this huge financial support from small donors across the country and physical donations. People are bringing them food and gas, like, you know, people are walking over to them and like offering them anything they need, right? And which enables them to participate in this protest movement. Okay, so who am I as a Marxist to deny the importance of these things to the working class? And then furthermore, to deny the real proletarian support that has been thrown behind this movement and this and these truckers, right? Like, of course, it's going to be limited. It's going to be very circumstant, but like the demands are modest to begin with, right? Like, so, you know, like the working class in Canada is so disorganized and has been demoralized for decades. This is just a hint of like a resurgence. That's it. You know, like, I don't know why Marxists just like go, you know, trip over themselves to, you know, to like stop any flicker of struggle, any flicker of, you know, some kind of movement towards self-determination that the working classes express, even disorganized and confused and messy as it is. You know, like, it's so annoying to me that they you know, you're not going to, I'm not going to be able to at this point in history to make a perfect political position here. No one can. Even my opposition to lockdowns is not like, if the lockdowns all ended tomorrow, we would still have loads of problems and like healthcare system problems, health problems within the proletariat more generally. But it is the best solution that's possible, politically speaking, according to my analysis. And if someone wants to tell me something different, if someone can convince me that there's truly a revolution possible at the precipice here, then go and make that case. But I don't think that's the case. So, you know, I don't know. Like, I think, I correct me if I'm wrong, if any of the people who read Marxist and Marx, but like, it seems to me that in the past, Marxists have indeed thrown their support behind movements that were not necessarily revolutionary at the time, but enabled what is, you know, what I think would really be the best thing to come out of this if the demands were achieved. It's not just the demands themselves, like, that are very modest, actually. If they were fulfilled, it would be, and, you know, linkages made between different workers, between people of the community more generally. It would be a sense of, you know, accomplishment, of victory that could carry over to more important struggles, that struggles that may have revolutionary potential. So I don't know, we have to start from somewhere. Like, it's just, it's, these people are just, they're like ultra leftists or something. I don't know what it is. Like, it's so crazy to me to think that anyone would think that freedom of association, freedom of movement, equality before the law, all these different things that are being infringed upon as a cause of these restrictions are unimportant for the working class.
Yeah, I think that's very well said. I take that completely. I agree with all that. I think I may have maybe summarized my point a little bit less clearly. I don't mean necessarily that you should throw your support behind anything that can destabilize, but rather after doing an analysis and you can determine that it would, in fact, further proletarian goals, even tangentially for a moment, you should then support it under that qualification. But the issue is that most of these ultra-leftists and such, they would rather try to wait until they can choose to start a revolution under circumstances of their own choosing, which is never, ever, 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 ever going to happen, right? These things don't take place in a vacuum. You can't just put things around on a little chessboard and then you click start and then you go. You know what I mean? You have to take the material conditions as they come. You have to read the different forces and where they have contradictions within society. And you need to exploit those tendencies when you can in order to further your interests. That's just being politically sound. That's just real politic.
Yeah, I feel like, I take both your points. I think you guys are, I agree with both because, you know, like Trump, I mean, I supported him because it was like, it's an inter-elite conflict. I mean, he's one of the elite, obviously. No one would deny that. But it's sort of the same thing of what Alex was bringing up about like Boris, you know, I kind of want an incompetent person up there. You know, I kind of have like the opposite reasoning of Richard Spencer. Like I want someone up there to sort of expose it and kind of throw a monkey wrench in there and just sort of make it more transparent as opposed to these
like anti-mold bug position.
Yeah. Yeah. As opposed to these fucking, Trudeau, reptiles and Obama reptiles that are a little bit more cunning or whatever. But yeah, there is this Marxist thing of sort of like, like post your work boots, bro. Like, let me see your worker credentials, how much dirt you got on your jacket or whatever.
It's so fucking embarrassing.
It's cringe as fuck. But like, yeah, I mean, like I agree with what Layla's saying. It's like, you know, I don't really give a fuck, honestly, the individual resumes or credentials of all these people or like what they do, like, or what their specific hyper specific status is within some subsect of some taxonomy. I don't really give a fuck. I think what they're doing is like, it makes sense. It makes perfect sense. I think most people don't want to be having this guillotine over their head of getting fired because they don't have a fucking sugar shot every 6 months. I think most people don't like that. I don't really give a fuck what they say about, oh, there's high rates of vaccination. I mean, yeah, because they threaten
people.
Because
they had to, motherfuckers.
Yeah, they threaten people, yeah. I mean, how many people, I mean, COH, last time we were talking about this, like COH was saying there's a lot of those truckers out there are vaccinated. I'm sure, I don't know if you have insight into this, Layla, but I'm sure like there's a lot of people out there that are like joining that are not just truckers or whatever that are sympathetic, at least that are like vaccinated people, I'm sure, because it's not, you know, it's just it's the mandate is where it's clearly like going over some line. I don't think you could deny that
you can't deny it. People across Canada, thousands of people, millions of people have lost their jobs because they thought that their bodily integrity, as against the employer, as against their state, their sense, their rational assessment of the situation, whether or not you disagree with it, it that was more important than their job. Okay, like, so for instance, in the province of Quebec, there were so many healthcare workers, nurses and PSWs and things like that, that were willing to lose their jobs because they didn't get this vaccine, that the province was forced to drop the mandate. They switched it to a test or jab option. Okay, so like, you know, they didn't protest. There was no organized movement to make that happen. They just were ready to lose their jobs, right? And they're ready to go work as a waitress, whatever it might be, to make ends meet. Because that was, this sense of self-determination is important. The workers are not just like, I don't know, like, they're not just like people you can give, like, you know, little treats to and they're satisfied or something like that. Like, people have a sense of, people in this society, they're highly educated, they're highly literate, you know, like any work of any, in any industry, you have at least, you know, 16 years, 17 years of education. They have a sense of self, you know, they can make their own decisions. And like, for someone to just say, well, I don't care about what you think, you just take it because I tell you so. You know, I don't know why any person should take that. Like, if you want to convince someone with evidence, with reasoning, why something is a good thing to do and respect their sense, their you know, their reasoning and their conscience, then go ahead and do that. But they can't do that because its vaccine actually isn't very good and it has failed to fulfill all of its promises. And so, you know, they have to turn to coercion. And it's been massively coercive in Canada with regards to this vaccine. Coercion from the medical profession, coercion from employers, coercion from the state. All of like the massive, not and you know, you mentioned like this supposed rift between the petty bourgeoisie, these different, you know, factions of the petty bourgeoisie. Guess what? The restaurateurs, the association that represents all the small businesses in Canada, have all come out against the truckers, right? So, you know, I don't think you can't, politics isn't made by the petty bourgeoisie or this, you know, whatever, this middling layer of elites that everyone always talks about. Politics is made by the proletariat or by the bourgeoisie, but, you know, it's not an or, of course, they're in dialectical unity. Every single moment is a resolution of class struggle between the proletariat and the bourgeoisie. So there's always some proletarian content. Okay. So like, you know, like you can't, but like, these people are not making politics. They think they do. They think that they are a class that has some kind of political leadership role to play. But they, when they realize that they don't, that's when they can be liberated, when they, you know, subsume themselves to the proletariat, right? As the truckers, in a very real way, have, like, when you speak to someone, they, you know, I think maybe probably because of the way that their field functions, maybe other things, you know, they all see themselves as workers. They see themselves as part of the working class. They don't relate to petty bourgeois professionals or otherwise, like, and you know, that's not quite the same thing when it comes to, like, say, doctors or say small business owners of other industries and stuff like that, right? Like, so I think this kind of consciousness, I think, is an interesting phenomenon to me. Something I have to think about a bit more. But you know, like, so yeah, like, I don't think that you know, these questions of, like, I don't know why people are so shocked, like, that people would come out for this kind of demand. Like, I don't know why they're so, like, you know, stunned that they have to resort to, like, these, like, baseless smears, like white supremacy and, like, anti-black racism, whatever it might be, to explain why these people are coming out for the protest movement. Like, it's just,
well, a lot of the framing is that they're babies, they don't want to wear a simple mask or take a free shot that's not harmful. Like, why, it's a small thing, like, why make this much commotion over something that's not that big of a deal? I mean, I don't think the vax is that dangerous. I mean, I can eat my shoe on that later. I think it's, like, there's definitely some risks or whatever. I don't think it's, like, a poisonous thing.
I don't think,
but
so
even
either.
Still, I don't think you even, yeah, exactly. But I don't even think you need to believe that to be against this. I mean, why, like, the fact that they're telling you they're going to fire you every 6 months and we're going to keep doing this for however many boosters there's going to be, that's plenty of reason alone. I don't really see it as any more complicated than that.
The question
that's plenty
pivots.
Reason alone to be like, fuck this. Like,
the question pivots on who's self-determination, whose rationality matters, right? Should I do something, regardless of whether or not I think it makes sense, regardless of whether or not I want to do it, should I do something just because someone tells me to do it, right? Because
right,
they are
right.
Over a position, they have a position of authority over me, they have material force over me, like my employer or the state. Guess what? If the working class was happy to be exploited, we would have no state. We wouldn't need to be having these discussions, right? Because, like, people would be fine with exploitation. They would be fine. There wouldn't be any struggle. But as soon as the proletariat was created, and of course there can't be a bourgeoisie without the proletariat, as soon as that dialectical unity of these two classes is created, a struggle instantaneously happens. Why? Because human beings are born free. They want to be able to make decisions over their own lives, you know, right, and to be able to control their communities. To, you know, like, I think the notion of freedom that I'm talking about here, it's something beyond the liberal notion, but I think that notion does have some meaning here too. Like, you know, it's very simple. Like, I don't know, the bourgeoisie takes it very, like, they don't have a problem with being like, well, just do what I say. Like, this is what I think. I wouldn't, and in fact, what I think is right, what I think is the science, and what I think is the correct path, it's worth it. You know, they don't have any issues making what are essentially political subjective statements, right? So I don't know why should the proletariat be not allowed to make these statements? There's a reason. It's because they're exploited and they're not in power. So whatever
especially,
they think doesn't
yeah.
matter. Yeah.
Especially as they're rescinding all their, you know, they're scaling back on the severity of COVID, or they're going to, you know, like Slav said, they're going to pin it to specifically Omicron or whatever. But, you know, there's so every day now, it's just more and more backtracking. And I saw some article where they're talking Politico about recalculating who went to the hospital for COVID, which is just fucking insane. And, you know, that who's that Asian woman, Dr. Lena Wen or whatever, who's just saying, like, yeah, you know, why are we masking kids? We shouldn't be masking kids over a mild variant, you know, the science
only
has
took
changed.
2 years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just all this stuff. It's just like when there's that going on and they're slowly, like, scaling it back for the midterms, obviously, and, you know, always subject to just bring it back whenever with a new variant. It's just funny while they're doing that, and then they still have to keep their foot out with why the vax mandates are necessary,
yeah,
or why Rogan needs to be deplatformed for saying something, for saying words. You know, it's a blatant contradiction. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, when you look at, like, the Marxists babbling on about how it's all a far right conspiracy, it's not the real working class. The real working class is this idealized picture I have in my head, where it's always Petrograd in 1917. first of all, like a lot of them have become completely divorced from like the reality of the working class life because there's no connection there at all in most of the major advanced countries. I mean, we saw it when a yellow vest movement in France broke out over Macron's green levy on petrol. That broke out. Many of the French left immediately called it like a fascist, Le Penist movement. I mean, we went through the whole Brexit thing here when all those of us who campaigned for it were called like fascists, white supremacists, British nationalists, British imperialists, even though all the major British capitalists supported remaining in the EU. And now you get this, which is like where all the major Canadian employers' federations and like the small, even the small business federations, as Layla said, they're all on the side of Trudeau and the government. But it doesn't matter to these leftists because they've got like a cartoon vision in their head of what revolution is, what Marxism is, what class struggle is. And it comes down to the fact that like not only are they completely cut off from the working class, but like we've been talking about reason and rationality. I think for a lot of these people, they don't believe that the working class is capable of rational decision making. They don't believe in the working class's capacity for reason because they've ingested a lot of like the bourgeois ideology in the that takes place in the Anglosphere countries, where they've ingested the idea of government by elite and expert, even if they don't want to admit it. And a lot of these people who write in like Jacobin or some of the more further ultra-left publications will go from saying nothing but revolution this way to vote Joe Biden to stop fascism on the turn of a coin.
Yeah,
they certainly did in 2020, and they did here in 2016 when they were saying it was some anarchists went from saying smash the state to support the EU like a giant supranational organization. because again, these people have no connection with the working class. They don't believe, ultimately, I believe that the working class could become the ruling class. These people don't. These people believe in cultural signifying, posturing, and making like ultra out there demands that might get them a lot of attention. But it's not a project to build working class power at all. It's just a screaming into the ether. So when suddenly something proletarian hits them in the face, they have a meltdown, because the reality that they've been successfully avoiding for so long, the messy reality of actual day-to-day class struggle, suddenly they can't avoid it anymore.
Yeah, that is funny, where a lot of them have this image of like the working class is like very woke. They all love pronouns. They all love masks. Like they just love it. Like, you know, there's some image in their head, and it's clearly like just them and their friends. You know, maybe they write for Jacobin. They're like, well, I'm working class because I work for, you know, freelance for Jacobin or whatever. Like, it's clear that they just, you know, they're talking about a very insular thing. But I mean, Brexit was like wildly popular. I mean, it was a fucking referendum. It was the numbers were there. Like, there was, he didn't even expect that. You know, Cameron, when that happens. So, I mean,
no, because
it's all in the open.
He was one of those leaders who actually believed his own bullshit as well. Like, he was an advertising executive, then he was a politician, like a very, very rich guy. Never believed for a moment that like anything could bite him on the ass. And it did. And the statistics showed that it was an interesting vote because, you know, I don't claim that Brexit's the revolution or anything, far from it, but it brought out a load of class contradictions. And one of the biggest was like the lower your income group, the more likely you were to vote for it. And like nobody wanted to address that. And the inability to address that is ultimately what blew up Corbyn's movement, because it was the hierarchy of it was dominated by these like petty bourgeois maniacs who ran around screaming that everybody was a racist, and then got surprised when they got beaten by a literal cartoon in Boris Johnson. And
oh man, yeah.
And then Corbyn gets screwed because like he couldn't acknowledge like the class content in Brexit at all. It's the reason why all these Canadian and American Marxist groups all ultimately get screwed, because every time like a class piece of class conflict comes up, they hide behind what they think is the progressive wing of the bourgeoisie. They hide behind Joe Biden. They hide behind Justin Trudeau. Or here they hide behind like Keir Starmer, for fuck's sake. Like, these people just deserve oblivion, because like they've got nothing to offer other than backing up ultimately the ruling class, which is what the sadly misnamed Canadian communists are doing now.
I remember when I was a leftist and I was watching the Boris Johnson Corbyn debate, and you know, Boris Johnson obviously just hammering every 10 seconds, Brexit, Brexit. He's just snuck it into every question. He's like, I'm going to do Brexit. I'm going to get it done. He's sick of hearing about this shit. Let's get it done. And fucking Corbyn is just like, he said, like, look, we can do another, let's do another vote on it.
Right.
It was just like, you know, even as an outsider who's not like invested in Brexit or I don't really know much about like the, you know, intricacies or whatever. It just sounded bad. It just sounded like, again, bro, like no one wants to hear this shit again. Like everyone's tired of this.
Such and a like, weak position. You know,
yeah, it was so middling. It was so like, it was clear that he was like trying to balance a lot of things. You know, it reminded me a lot of Bernie talking about we have to take Russiagate serious. It's like, man, I don't think you really believe that shit. I think you're just saying that because they're telling you you got to say this shit.
And then they used it against him. And then they used it against him. And they're like, he's a fucking bot. Yeah, he's a fucking Russian agent, dude. Yeah. I mean, like, say what you will about like you know, elements of the truckers that aren't, you know, authentically working class and things like that, and it's probably entirely accurate and all that, but like the equivalent on the left are just like completely deracinated. They have absolutely no fucking roots down and connection with like anyone around them, and that's why they completely just spin themselves in circles and honestly just like don't know what is up and what is down. Yeah. I mean, I might not think that like this, like small business tyrants or something are like my absolute first choice when it comes to like a political ally. If we're talking about like ideals, but again, like they actually have some kind of stake in like the fucking area around them, which like really can't be said of like, you know, the people, you know, supporting Corbyn that, you know, couldn't win an election against a literal drunk man.
All right, that was part one of our episode. If you'd like to listen to part two, you can find that at patreon.com/fedpost. Thanks for listening.